Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt. This is Rolling Stone Music Now. I have with me Jeffy Haza, and we're going to talk about Young Thug. Young Thug has a new album out called Punk. Jeff also got to spend some time with Young Thug in Atlanta for a Rolling Stone digital cover story. That was really great. You should check that out. It seemed like a good time to kind of look back at Young Thug's career, talk about this new album, talk about Jeff's experience there. I mean, but let's take a step back, and this is one of the most interesting careers, not just in hip-hop over the last decade, but in, you know, pop music across the board. Take us back to kind of the start, and maybe take us through some of his evolution.
Thug is someone who kind of emerged, not seemingly out of nowhere, but he emerged in this way that it wasn't as though he belonged to some sort of lineage, you know? And I think in hip hop, you usually have stars come through other stars, right? Where it's like, oh, like you're kind of associated with this thing going on. And then now you kind of pop off. With Thug, it was like the introduction of just like a completely new species into the game, you know? And this must've been around what, 2013, 2012, 2011, when 1017 Thug came out. And, you know, that's where we get the introduction of this like really, really crazy vocal register, right? And this like very like dynamic way of delivering both, you know, R&B type singing and really, really crazy wordplay when you really think about it and like dig into like the stuff he's saying. And I think it didn't take long for him to really, really establish himself as like the only one doing what he was doing.
And a lot of that early on, a lot of that was this sort of, rather than wordplay, almost sound play. This almost abstract kind of thing he would do with sounds and words and stretching. And people have expended a lot of words of music criticism trying to describe what it was he was doing that was so unique.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that's what was so crazy, right? And it's like, it was guttural. It was, you know, it's like you could say he raps in like nonsense language or his own language. But, you know, it's like, it's almost like Tolkien, right? Where like Tolkien created an entire universe for Lord of the Rings. And it's like, there are artists who kind of, and you can go back into all sorts of genres where there are artists who really do have a certain like talent or skill at just really crafting something completely outside of the realm of what we like know to understand.
Well, it was a little bit of a paradigm shift, right? And I think the point you make that's really smart is that even though he's about 30, he feels like part of Gen Z rather than part of an older generation. He helped establish so much of what became sort of like modern rap. All these different artists have been pulling from him for a long time now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that piece of the story, when I was writing it, was really interesting because I just finished a different profile of this like Gen Z rap group, Surf Gang, out of New York. And I was talking to one of the members, I think his name's Casper, and he's like, you know, very just quintessential, you know, if you thought of what a 22-year-old rap star in this year looks like, you know, tattoos, very punkish, has a sort of pop punk sensibility going on. And one of the questions I asked them was like, oh, do you guys look up to any, you know, any rappers of the older generation, any, you know, millennial rappers, Drake, anyone like that? And, you know, it's just like a resounding no. There's like 12 kids in the room and they're all like, hell no, we don't care about anybody else. It's like the few, we're like doing our thing. And then the only exception everyone had to that was Young Thug. And it made me think like, oh yeah, out of every rapper in their late 20s, early 30s right now, and I'm thinking of, you know, Drake, Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole, super, super big rappers, millions and millions of streams, platinum records, etc. But when you think about like what that cultural impact actually looks like, Young Thug is the only one currently that I think from that generation that actually still matters to a lot of young people. And I thought that was a really fascinating part about his kind of trajectory.
maybe one of the first songs I heard by him, and the first song a lot of people maybe heard was Stoner back in 2014, which kind of exemplified what he was doing early on.
Stoner! My damn day. Stoner! I'm Stoner, I'm Stoner, I'm Stoner.
I mean, Stoner was a gigantic moment in hip-hop, I feel like, because it introduced a style of hook that I think really, really came to dominate rap music for, you know, the decade to follow. And it was also Thug in this moment of understanding kind of his own power within the realm of pop, because I think up to that point, he was making just insanely dynamic and interesting music in a very kind of Atlanta rap context. You know, this is around the time that Gucci finds him, and, you know, he's on 1017. He's in that lane pretty firmly, and he's like the outsider genius of the Atlanta rap scene. And I think with Stoner, that was the moment that he became the outsider genius of mainstream music.
I think it was 2015 that the Rich Gang album came out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think what stands out to me about that record and that kind of dynamic at that time, more than the specific album itself, because it's not something that, if I'm honest, I revisit a whole lot. There's a bunch of really good tracks off that for sure. But what's interesting there is it's like one of the first times that you see Thug kind of find a like creative kindred spirit in a way. And I feel like more recently, right, it's like you see that with him and some of the artists on YSL, where it's like, you know, who he matches kind of that energetic, interesting way of like looking at vocals, you know, thinking about the songs he does with Gunna, where it's like they both have this like untethered relationship to just like their voices, where it's like it doesn't have to do anything normal. It's like they can take it wherever they want. And I think with his collaboration with Rich Gang, I feel like that was him kind of being like, I have this universe, I have the solar system that's the Thug universe. Who else can fit in that? Who else can be in that orbit? And that was an interesting thing for him to be able to do so early on.
You mentioned YSL, which is his label. Maybe as a digression, just sort of explain what's been going on with that and who the artists that you're feeling on that label.
Yeah. So YSL is, you know, Young Stoner Life. I'm trying to remember exactly when the label was founded. I feel like it was around 2017 or 2018.
2016, yeah.
2016. So, you know, it's kind of the trajectory that we've come to see and kind of recognize as quite familiar in hip hop, where a rapper will get pretty big and, you know, get pretty successful. And then it turns into an entrepreneurial effort of how do I maintain kind of this legacy and this kind of thing that I've built and now have people under me. So, I mean, YSL, as far as that goes, just in terms of, you know, record labels started by rappers, I think it's one of the more successful recent examples that we have, right? Where it's like, if you look at something like OVO Sound, there are some hits on there and there's some people doing really well, but I don't know that it has had the sort of like deep impact that YSL has had just in the past 2 years. The same goes for, you know, Kanye and the various versions of good music that we've seen, J. Cole's Dreamville. It's like there's, you know, everyone kind of does it, but I think Thug is really one of the few people who's done it really well. And, you know, just look at Slime Season 2. It's like everyone on it has something to offer. Or Slime Language 2, sorry.
Right. That was one of his mixtapes that was heavily featured people from YSL, and it worked really well. Which leads us to, we'll go back to the discography in a second, but, you know, one of the things that was evident in your story is his sort of wider business ambitions. I think he said he wanted to be the richest black man in the world. You know, you read stories about him again from the early days and people be like, oh, he's going to be dead in 10 years. I mean, there was actually a story, a GQ story, someone, a friend predicted that. And I don't think so. I think that you're the trajectory if I had to say which was more likely, I'd say that the ambition he expressed to you is probably more likely. It seems like he's not just saying this. It seems like, you know, especially when you see how much success someone like Kanye has had outside of music, you could really see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he mentioned Kanye when we sat and spoke as like kind of like the direction that he sees, you know, the future going, where it's like he, you know, he takes this brand that he's doing, Spider, quite seriously. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw like a significant fashion moment from him, like independently. I think, you know, Thug is someone who is not, even though he's a brilliant musician and literally told me that he's addicted to rapping, you know, I think he's just an artist. I think he's a genuinely creative person who is always going to be able to find ways to express his vision through any kind of medium. And I think what's really interesting as he gets more famous and as he gets bigger as an artist is what opportunities then will open up for him. I think even seeing him in the fashion context in the past few years makes so much sense where, you know, nowadays rappers kind of introduce themselves through fashion, right? Where it's like they'll play a bunch of fashion shows before anyone's even heard an album. Whereas with Thug, you know, the fashion world didn't even realize how brilliant he was until he was already, you know, three mixtapes deep or something. So Thug is going to do whatever he's going to do. And I think it's really just a matter of how he makes it work and what it looks like.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
This decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
And in 2016, speaking of fashion, he released his "Know My Name Is Jeffrey" mixtape, and his name is Jeffrey.
Shout out to Jeffries.
He was wearing a now very famous dress on that cover, and 5 years later, how do we look back at that dress moment?
Well, it's funny, right? Because I feel like even in contemporary high fashion, like men in dresses is very normalized at this point, or at least on its way to being. You know, Young Thug's a trendsetter. As he told me, he always knew that people were going to follow him. So, you know, on one hand, it's not very surprising that he was the first person to kind of publicly do something like that. On the other hand, it is really interesting because I think there's been so much speculation around his sexuality to the point where, you know, especially having spent time with him, it's like there's nothing about him that suggests that he's hiding some sort of like secret sex life. Like, he's very who he is and open about who he is. So for there to be as much confusion around his sexuality just based on the fact that he chose to, you know, dress a certain way on an album cover or just in general, I think says so much more about kind of the world that he was coming into versus himself, right? Where it's like people really weren't ready for Young Thug and he just didn't care.
Now, Jeff, the sort of current evolution of what Thug is doing is maybe it began with Beautiful Thugger Girls and all the guitars on there, and they even occasionally like almost country leanings and just a more melodic new kind of experimentation. Is that where things started to shift in this current direction?
Yeah, I think Beautiful Thugger Girls, for one, is probably one of his more underrated projects. I think, as with so many things with Young Thug, people weren't ready at the time. Even though, to me, it's one of the most interesting rap projects in a long time, solely based on its, like, ethos, right? Where it's like we talked so much about Lil Nas X kind of tapping into country and tapping into pop, and here Young Thug was, several years earlier, doing the same thing. So I do see this record as a lot of that energy kind of resurging. And you know, it's funny too, because when I talked to Thug, two of his favorite songs actually had come off of Beautiful Thugger Girls. So, you know, in a lot of ways, it's not terribly surprising that he would, you know, lean into that on his new record. And when you listen to Punk, you can clearly see that he's really stretching the bounds of what he does. Not so much, you know, treading new ground, but I think he's leaning more into some of the projects or some of the ideas that two or three albums ago or mixtapes ago were the experimental songs, were the kind of, you know, one-off tracks that were kind of weird that got talked about. Whereas now I think he's ready to make a whole album full of that sound.
Speaking of his favorite songs, one of them is from Jeffrey, and it's Riri. And he names songs, I think, after artists that they end up reminding him of, and in this case, Rihanna and Work.
Word. Yeah.
That was a funny one, too, because I think when you mentioned that track, it didn't immediately occur to me what it sounded like, because it wasn't one that I listened to a bunch. So when I went back home and listened to it, it ended up being the only thing I played the entire time I'm, like, writing the article. Because it is a really, really interesting song, just, like, sonically. Like, he does so many things with his voice. He's clearly inspired by a Rihanna song, but then takes it in this whole other realm. And then as a result, it's like you get this, like, it's like a capsule from the brain of Young Thug, where it's like naming it Riri, where it's like you can hear the song sounds like hearing him listen to Rihanna and being inside of his brain. You know, like it's like a real distillation of like his framework.
The fact that he sort of needs to curate his own catalog for people, and you know, the best way is just asking him what's your favorite songs, which not everyone gets the chance to do, which you did. But it would be very interesting to hear sort of an entire best of pick by him, because, and the reason is, he has released so much music. The only rap hero he ever acknowledged early on was Lil Wayne. That was sort of who he picked as his sole influence. And of course, Lil Wayne released that torrent of music in the 2000s. And, you know, I think he's come close to that in his way. There's, you know, I think there's like, just since 2015, there's seven commercial mixtapes. And then between 2011 and 2015, there's like 10 or something. So there's just a ton of music. So besides Beautiful Thugger Girls, which you cited as one of the best, what else in the catalog, and Jeffrey's Good, what else in the catalog is sort of essential, because it is an overwhelming amount of music.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of his features are really worth going back and looking at, because I think there's so many nuggets in some of those features. I think of like the Drake song Sacrifices, where he says, "I'm a username," like, well, who is he? And just there, you know, he does that a lot on a few tracks, where it's like he has these really incredible like turns of phrases that just stick with you.
I'm a username, like, who is he? You get it? I said I'm a username, like, who is he? Got some gold on, leprechaun sheets, deep sleeps off a distance.
And then the other song that I always think about, Good Times, which I think the name is either Good Time, There's Gonna Be Good Times, something along those lines. The Jamie XX feature from, I guess that was the summer of, must have been 2015. And it's got Popcon and Young Thug on it. And that to me was just such a crazy moment to like witness, where I think there was like a Vogue video at one point that Thug was in with all these models and couture. And, you know, it's like, here he is on a British electronic musician song making something that, to me, will probably define like an era of American pop music, right? Like that song was so ubiquitous, was so big, and meant so much in so many different ways. And it was all because of Thug. You know, the beat was kind of whatever, but you know, Thug's ability to kind of tap into that, even that lane, and just create something totally different is such a good example of what he does well.
Good times, there's gonna be some good times. Man, we used to pull up and let them fight at that hood time. Remember, I used to grab on that when it was about that wood time.
There's another Drake one as well, Ice Melts, which I think is off of More Life. And that one is a lot like Riri in some ways, in which, you know, it's him doing this, like, very dynamic thing with his voice, where it's like, I'm not going to try to sing right now, but you know, go and listen to the song, and it's like he like modulates in real time in a way that's like unreal.
Yeah, you were talking about the innovations of Beautiful Thugger Girls. Maybe you could dig a little bit more into what changed precisely.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Beautiful Thugger Girls, you know, it's very similar to with Riri, where a lot of the music just feels like you are inside of his brain as he listens to something else, and like it's being translated in real time. And with Beautiful Thugger Girls, it's like, you know, clearly he's taking after some country and acoustic vibes, but it's coming out in this distinctly, you know, Young Thug way. And it's like, it's almost like you're hearing a memory, right? It's like you're listening to him remember hearing a country song, and the result is a very dynamic version of hip hop, like evidence of the malleability of rap music, where, oh yeah, you can rap over basically anything. And then also Thug is just, you know, he has a good voice. I think as much as, you know, a lot of commentary is around how much he, like, changes his voice and how many different weird things he can do with his voice, I think ultimately, like, the guy can sing. There are some songs on Beautiful Thugger Girls where you can really tell that he's just, like, at his heart, just a musician.
So, in the time you spent with him, it was before punk came out, but you got to hear some of it in advance, and you also kind of got a sense of his ambitions for the album and what he was thinking. What was your sense of what he was doing? Because it, both in your piece and other pieces, it's like he used to be really, really spontaneous in the studio. A lot of these things would come almost like stream of consciousness, but this was something he labored over in a lot of cases. He worked on this album for like a really long time, revised the songs. It's just a different kind of creation. And also the lyrical focus is totally different. The vulnerability is different. Where was his head at as he was kind of making this album?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very tied into the fact that he talked to me at all. You know, I think if you read most Young Thug interviews, right, it's like everyone has to end up writing around him because he's kind of unavailable. And, you know, in our conversation, you definitely got the sense that the pandemic had a big part in him realigning his own focus and kind of thinking more about, you know, maturity and growing up and, you know, being a father and kind of wanting to be more open with the world as a means of being more open with yourself. So, you know, on that front, you could definitely tell in the music that this is a different Young Thug. This is a Young Thug who has thought deeply about things for some time. But then on the flip side, you know, I wasn't privy to any of the recording process. And I talked to management and it didn't sound like, you know, he was sitting in the studio every single day nonstop. You know, I think a lot of the style of recording of him kind of being spontaneous was maintained in this project. I think the difference is, you know, he really took his time here. You know, I think the first song, Die Slow, you know, it started, that one was recorded, or the idea for it came out when he was on tour in like 2018 in Italy. So it's one of those things where it's been years and years in the making with this project specifically. And I think that's also why it's so long and things like that, where, you know, a lot of these songs have been gestating for a long time. I gotta tell you that you're right to
One sort of constant in the profiles of him, and you're going back almost a decade now, is gambling. He just will not stop gambling. I think a lot of people have tried to make sort of musical metaphors with that. I don't know how you see it.
Well, the first thing I asked him, you know, when we're sitting at the table and they're all kind of gambling, when I asked him what he likes about it, he was just like, addiction. And that's when I asked him about rap music, and it was like, for me, I was like, I wonder if there's a way to get him to start talking about music by just saying whether or not there's a similarity between, you know, the way he raps and the way he gambles. And then he ended up just saying he was addicted to both, which is fair. But it's really, I mean, I don't know, it's an interesting thing. I've never really been around gambling a whole lot, so it was also just new to me in general. I don't even know how any of the card games work. But, you know, I think Young Thug is a risk taker. And I think that's how, you know, habits like that form, where there's a certain feeling associated with kind of defying odds. And, you know, who hasn't defied more odds than Young Thug, right? So, you know, you see where it comes from and you can see how it plays into kind of the larger idea of who he is.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Something that I didn't know until I read it in your story, although I guess it was in a live stream, that he had had some kind of like major drug-related health scare sometime in the last year. But he didn't really elaborate on that when you tried to ask him about that, I guess.
Right. And, you know, there were so many moments in that interview where I would ask a question and then he would just like keep playing and then like 5 minutes would go by. So then it's like a clear indication to move on. But you know, he did reveal during COVID, during a live stream, about, you know, this health issue that he had. And, you know, it wasn't the first time. I think he'd even posted on Instagram a year or so prior to that, himself in a hospital bed and something about drugs. So, you know, these are things that, you know, he's consistently faced. I think with Thug, what is perhaps hopeful or inspiring is that out of any other artist or musician that you see kind of grapple with some of these issues, he seems to maintain a certain level of equanimity. Like, as much as I've witnessed the man, you know, consume and witnessed him gamble and seen in videos and everything else, it would still shock me to this day if I ever saw like a TMZ, like Young Thug just strung out somewhere. You know, he has a way of holding it together, and it's just like part of who he is.
The whole idea of punk, and there is some actual direct sort of pop punk influence on the album. He never really, other than the fact that he and Elton John know each other, noted punk artist Elton John, you don't really hear a lot of specific, like, sort of rock references. Or do you? Like, where I don't know if he just has a... Because obviously these influences have come in, but it seems like just sort of the general idea of it rather than any specific... Or do you get anything specific from him as far as, like, where the guitars come from, where this the punk idea itself comes from, where the pop punk comes from, anything?
Right, right. I mean, I think it's a fascinating thing kind of going on within hip-hop in general right now. I think you saw it also with Playboi Carti's album, which, I mean, I guess he made more of an effort to kind of draw some sort of line between certain old punk acts and what he was doing. But I think in all of it, it's really just it's an ethos thing. And I think punk, the idea of punk is as, you know, pervasive in the public imagination as hip-hop or as rap, right? So it's like, you can never have heard a rap song, but then have some general idea of what goes into rap culture. And I think it's cool to see rappers flip that with punk, where it's like, we don't really know that much about this music, but I want to kind of personify that in the same way. And then on the album itself...
That's,
you know,
pretty funny, actually.
Right, right. And then on the album itself, you know, yeah, there isn't a ton of, like, bracing guitars or anything like that. But I do think, you know, and when I asked him about the album in person, you know, it's so much more about a vibe, right? It's about being a punk. It's about what that means to him. And I do think there's a good deal of that on the record.
I love that meme, which I've seen before, like the Young Thug Through the Eras fan art. What are some of your favorite eras, favorite kind of aesthetic moments for him over the years?
I mean, as far as, you know, musically, I think his debut was a huge achievement on a just sound level. And I'm thinking of that's So Much Fun. I think he achieved so much on that record that it's actually difficult for him, even all these years later, to match that level of, you know, breakthrough sound, you know, public opinion and public sound shifting production and just sonics that record had. You know, So Much Fun is kind of what brought us this era of the YSL, you know, label taking over so much. It's like, that's where we were introduced to people like Gunna and stuff. And it's like just a shift. Like, he really moved the culture with that album. Before that, you know, there's just so much. Barter 6 was an incredible record, obviously. That was another one that had just a tectonic effect on what people were doing in rap music. So I feel like every few records with Thug, you know, he does something that just completely changes the way everyone approaches rap.
It's also weird, like, his quote-unquote debut was, like, 5 years into his career. It wasn't, like, to be clear, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Because he built up to it with all these mixtapes. Jeff, I've always been interested in sort of Young Thug and Future as sort of twin figures in Atlanta. I sort of feel like Thug is, like, Funhouse mirror version of Future, or Future's Batman and Young Thug is Joker. I don't know quite how to, but they're similar and yet very different. They've also worked together and they're also friends, which is good. It felt like they could only be close friends or like intense rivals, and it's good that they're friends. But how do you kind of see their sort of artistic juxtaposition?
I like the Batman Joker idea, because I mean, in some ways, the Joker and Batman are friends. But I think, you know, both of them have at their core, a creative vision when it comes to music that is very unique and very different from what everyone else around them is doing. And also their trajectories are very similar. You know, Future, before he really popped off, was doing this like weirdo, like very auto-tune, crazy, emotional music that a very specific set of people loved and were obsessed with. And I think Thug had a very similar trajectory where, you know, he's prolific in this way. We're just putting out track after track after track, but it's hitting for a very specific audience that kind of gets it and knows what he's doing. And I think, you know, for both of them, over the years, as they rise in popularity and they become, you know, mainstream superstars, it's nice to see them both kind of maintain that friendship with one another and also that creative energy of recognizing at the core what they're doing, as opposed to being changed, you know, once the success comes.
Yeah, it's a good point about Future. Something like Tony Montana, like the early Future stuff, was much weirder than the later stuff. I think they were maybe more similar early on and then kind of diverged. It's just it's interesting. I think at the same time, Thug was always like more in the stratosphere, like more unhinged, more wild. Another comparison that's interesting to me, just when you're talking about Atlanta, is the Migos, because they really just kind of stayed in their lane. They haven't had the sort of evolution that someone like Thug has. And it does seem like possibly, you know, he's kind of outlasting them in some ways.
Yeah, man, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. And I think, you know, the Migos might have different priorities in terms of what they are interested in maintaining in terms of their careers, or, you know, in terms of what success even looks like for them. Because, you know, it's like with Migos, it was always kind of fun. They tapped into something, especially in terms of a group dynamic between them. But you never really got the sense that they were trying to necessarily push boundaries or sounds or anything. You know, it was like, these are guys who are just going to make some really fun songs.
That's right. And it wasn't like there was some early promise of, we're going to, you know, turn the musical world upside down. It was, they've stayed consistent in a good way. It's not like they betrayed anything that they kind of promised early on.
Right, right. And I think, you know, in terms of their staying power musically, I think you're also right in that the flip side of that, or kind of the dark side of being consistent in that, like, specific lane, is that over time, audiences do kind of grow tired, or they grow overly familiar with what you have to offer. You know, Migos had a whole album come out not that long ago, and I don't remember seeing that many people talk about it. And that's kind of, you know, one of them is doing a show on HBO about streetwear now. You know, they've got other things going on, so I think that might be kind of the new trajectory for them, where they kind of become more blanket-level celebrities. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if I see them in movies soon enough. But, you know, with someone like Thug, I think the artistry and that intention around the music is what drives him. One of the things Thug told me is, like, if I had as much money as I have now with a lawn care service, I'd have quit. I'd have retired by now. But he'll never retire from rapping. So I think, you know, that energy of, like, it's not about achieving some new goal or new success. It's, like, this thing within him that has to create.
He must have heard Rick Ross tell you about landscaping, and that's why he had the landscaping is the hot rap thing right now. But I was weirdly, I don't know why I was surprised, but you should never be surprised when any successful musician has this on their plate. But when I found out that he's going to do some acting, for some reason, that took me a little bit by surprise, because I thought of him as such a pure creature of studio creativity. It's like, oh wow, no, he's gonna, you know, he can act too. On some level, it makes total sense.
Right, right. I mean, I'm very curious to see how he does in this role in this upcoming movie. You know, he had a few appearances on a BET show before this role that he's about to do. So, you know, he's familiar with what it takes to act. And, you know, even going back to that Vogue video around Good Time and, you know, the sort of dancing around and all the models and everything, you know, Young Thug is somebody who is very good at presentation. Like, he's very good at putting himself together and showing himself in a certain way. So in some ways, it makes a lot of sense that he would kind of tap into acting. But, you know, we've seen a lot of hip hop artists make that jump in the past. So it remains to be seen what it actually looks like.
I like when he told you, you just keep learning how to keep learning, which does explain why he's making musical progress, is he understands that. And to be honest, I didn't even get that from Future. I didn't get from Future that he's looking to kind of find some total new reinvention. I found that he was just looking for kind of like, he was looking to just keep moving, but not to like reinvent himself. And it feels like Thug has that thing that only some musical artists have across genres where they're like, no, I can't actually keep doing the same thing. You know, I actually need to find something totally new every couple of years at least.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that and, you know, we could have a whole other episode about Future, because my hypothesis is that something derailed him, a very public thing derailed him for years. But with Thug, you know, I think you're totally right where...
I don't think he would argue with you about that, but yeah.
But, you know, with Thug, it's almost like nothing could possibly derail him, because the only thing he is focused on is the art and is that vision. And it's why I think, you know, we have all these stories about him being so spontaneous in the studio as well, where if he needs to make a song, if he needs to make music, it doesn't matter if it's 1 p.m. or 3:30 in the morning, like that is going to come out of him. And that's just purely what has to happen. So I think with Thug, you know, it's not necessarily like he's a genuine artist versus not, but I think he's someone who the artistry holds, you know, primacy over everything else. And that can come with its own detriments in, you know, your personal life and things like that. But as far as the music goes, it's like it's always going to be chasing reinvention.
We should talk about his brother for a minute, because that was one thing I didn't actually was pretty unaware of. His brother is an artist signed with YSL, and he got his brother out of prison when he had been sentenced to life.
Yeah, so his brother had been sentenced to life. I'm not sure the exact details on the case, but basically they have been fighting the case since probably 2015 or 2016. And I think they've gone through multiple different lawyers. You know, there's so many small fees attached to fighting any sort of legal case, whether it's, you know, a traffic violation or, you know, a larger case. And I think with this one, it was a matter of persistence. And I think that's what really shines through when you kind of think about Thug. And when I talk to his brother, even where, you know, you go through an appeal once and it takes forever and it doesn't necessarily pan out, most people aren't just going to keep hammering at it. But for him to kind of spend all those years, all of the, you know, 5-6 years pouring thousands and thousands of dollars into the case, that's something else. You know, that's a level of determination that I don't think you see very often.
And it also goes to his sort of radical generosity. It's almost like the stories you hear about Elvis Presley, where he's like, here's a Cadillac. Like, he's giving people cars and jewelry and, like, cash.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Elvis example is actually probably the most compelling one. Like, I think if you were to compare Thug to anyone, I would think Elvis. I mean, I think just in so many ways, outside of Elvis's, the troubling dynamic between Elvis and black musicians, in which he was able to become famous and they were not. But I think, you know, in the same way that Elvis kind of introduced a completely different paradigm in the way we thought about pop culture, both musically and aesthetically, because he also was like a sex symbol in a time when we didn't really do sex symbols, you know, Thug has kind of done a very similar thing. You know, he reinvented the sound of hip hop in a lot of ways, and also reinvented the way people present themselves as hip hop artists. So, you know, I think he's the same level of groundbreaking to me.
Maybe hit the topic of his influence again, because it is like you do see it in what Playboi Carti's been doing. You have heard it in what Lil Uzi Vert has been doing. But maybe expand on that a little bit about just how you've seen his, you know, this is someone, again, who's, you know, he's still very much a going concern as an artist, but if he stopped now, his influence would be secure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's infectious. I think what Thug is doing and what Thug makes is just, it's naturally infectious and, like, intoxicating. Like, you encounter it, you almost have to take some of it on because it's just so interesting and so different. I think a really good example of Thug's influence happens in real time on the track Stressed from Punk, in which J. Cole, you know, the first line of his verse, it's like, okay, I recognize that voice, it's J. Cole. And then halfway through, it's like Thug is rapping. And it's like to see even on a track how impactful it is to just be next to Thug, and how, you know, someone's rapping can almost like morph into that was really interesting. And I think it really is a testament to just how compelling and dynamic and interesting an artist that he is.
Before I might just change my mind, nowadays $1 million barely worth for nigga time. I ain't saying I'm a rich nigga.
Two things. I mean, first of all, we were talking about Beautiful Thugger Girls a bunch, but the guitars on that ended up being a big influence on hip-hop production for the past few years. I mean, I think that was a big place where this real guitar-heavy thing started, and you hear it everywhere, just everywhere in rap.
Yeah, and I think Thug recognized something in that perhaps too soon. You know, another story I just finished was the Polo G cover recently, and, you know, his gigantic hit of the year, Rap Star, was riding on a ukulele melody. And in the same way, that song became a super big hit in, like, middle America, partially as a result, right? Where it's like you have demographics that aren't really rap listeners, but love a good guitar tune, love a good ukulele melody. And I think Thug was in some ways recognizing that early with Beautiful Thugger Girls and noticing that, oh, well, we can just get country fans to like listen to me and I'll do like country rap and that'll, and it'll be cool. And, you know, knowing Thug, it's like, of course it's going to be cool. And I think, you know, it seems as though it came from a desire or an instinct towards tapping into and connecting with new audiences and new types of people.
And like you said, that was also before Old Town Road as well. So he was just kind of, he kind of is always a few years ahead of, you know, his earliest stuff. You hear him say like that, you hear him doing the sheesh thing, which is like only now, 9 years later, is like this, whatever the fuck it is on TikTok for little white kids on TikTok. So it's just, and he was doing that 9 years ago, you know, so it's kind of wild.
Yeah.
And then finally, just, I mean, let's just to dig into punk just a little bit. I mean, what are the kind of the highlights and maybe lowlights, if any, for you of this album?
Yeah. So, you know, so as I mentioned, I think Stressed with J. Cole, and, you know, I'm a publicly known, not a big fan of J. Cole. And for Thug to create to make a track that literally made me a J. Cole fan overnight, I think that's a pretty big achievement.
I'm sure J. Cole will be really flattered that now that he did a track where he sounds like Young Thug, now you like him. I'm sure he'll be really delighted by that. But yeah, sorry, go on.
And then, you know, Icy Hot with Doja Cat was another one where, you know, in the same way that I think Thug has this really good dynamic with Gunna, like another younger artist that shares so much of a sensibility with him, I think Doja Cat and Thug are two very interesting artists to pair together. Because, you know, Doja Cat is also a kind of outsider, experimental, weirdo realm of hip-hop, and I think they have a really, really cool chemistry together. I thought the Mac Miller track that comes at the end of the record is really was just like, you know, every time Mac Miller's legacy is one that, unlike I think some other hip hop artists who've passed away tragically too soon, you know, no one yet has done any posthumous Mac Miller collaboration that wasn't just perfectly tasteful and great and nice. And I'm sure it's a testament to just, you know, how well-regarded he was among the rappers that he's collaborated with. But I really appreciated that on the end of the record.
Since a kid, I've been a dresser, $1,000. I was seeing my diamonds green, piece of pork pie. Whoa, yeah. Bitch talk, don't want sleeping.
Thug said that Mac recorded that the day before he died.
Yeah, that they were together the day before. And that, you know, it's just things like that where it's like you can almost feel that, you know? And it's like the track is called Day Before, and it's like the whole record is about kind of confronting your life in this kind of scope. And, of course, to close with that is really powerful to me. I thought Hate the Game was a track that I really enjoyed. I mean, that was one of the ones I got to hear before the album came out. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, he's really doing the, like, pop-punk thing. That's cool.
Do not hate me, hate the game, baby. Do not hate me, hate the game, baby. Pop out the Lamborghini.
You know, some of the things that I think we didn't need, the Post Malone ASAP Rocky collab, Living It Up, I think they were aiming for a really big hit. Like, they really wanted that, like, global, you hear it everywhere track. It just doesn't land. It doesn't land with that. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like the kind of thing that's almost like, it flirts with cringy, you know what I mean? And then, yeah, I mean, and then as for the rest of the record, it's like most of it is just, it's good. It's listenable. I'll run it through a few times, but this record is missing, I think, you know, a big moment. And I think that's what a lot of fans might be feeling a little disappointment with. And there's just too many songs, 20 songs.
So at the same time, it's one of those albums where it's like, oh, I mean, he's at this point deep into his career. It's clear that there's a lot ahead And you can kind of feel that. And I think you're probably still pretty curious about what we hear next from him.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I think this record feels like a palate cleanser, even to the point of how long it is. It almost feels like a brain dump of him being like, here's everything that I've got. Finally, it's out. No more thinking about it. You know, it's like turning in a really big piece, right, as a writer, where it's like finally you can kind of have mental space for something new and to reimagine what else you're doing. So, I mean, if anything, this record opens the door for like a really interesting, you know, era for Young Thug. And I think that's the thing to look forward to now.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
So that was today's Rolling Stone Music Now. Be sure to check out Jeffy Haas's cover story on Young Thug for Rolling Stone. And we'll be back next week here on SiriusXM's Volume. In the meantime, we are a podcast. Download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, please leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. That is truly appreciated. But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.